Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Workers quitting their jobs, a record amount for August. Are we in the midst of Striketober? Liz Schuler speaking out. And today on the show, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Welcome to the Friday, October 15th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. This being the third Friday of the month, it goes to Jeffrey Stouffer from the American Legion magazine. He heads the Media and Communications Division. We bring him to the show every month to talk about the upcoming issue, which would be the November issue. And three topics we're going to get into. One is quite fascinating. Goes back to a paper written in 1950. Think about that. How many years? 76 years ago? The paper shaped America's response to the Soviet challenge, offering wisdom in navigating the Cold War. And when you take a look at the paper, it's like something that would be written today. That's the eerie part of this. Talks about the looming Soviet threat. Communism, everything is included in it. And Alan Dowd is the author of the article, and he said, well, okay, it was the Soviet Union. Today it's China. So we'll talk about that. That's one of the issues we're going to get into. It's titled NCS-68. That's the title of the paper that was written back in 1950. Then we're going to go back to 1920, and that's when the American Legion actually started. Well, they started in 1919, right after World War One. And Hamilton Fish III, he was a representative, he introduced legislation, and he was key to getting the American Legion started. He made a trip to Europe to deliver the unknown soldier to Arlington National Cemetery. And it was quite a process. The dedication was on November 11th, 1921. The trip from France to the United States would be carried out on the USS Olympia, which is now dry docked and on display at the Independence Seaport Museum in Philadelphia. It's the last of the U.S. Spanish-American war fleet still in existence. Well, it was a rough ride, very rough ride, going across the Atlantic, and that's the second story. Lastly, we're going to talk about, this one's titled Safe Haven, and it's about a post in Philadelphia, American Legion Post 385. It's a basketball youth league, and the whole idea here, this is nothing new. It's a group of people, this time coming from the American Legion, trying to go into the inner city and connect with youth, disadvantaged youth, people of color. Get them involved in sports, form a brotherhood or a sisterhood, and keep them away from crime. Great story. It's titled Safe Haven. That'll be our third topic. Rich Fiesta will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans. In case you haven't heard and you're on Social Security, you are getting a pay raise at the beginning of the new year. Not just any kind of pay raise. 5.9%. That's right, cost of living. That's because, as you know, everything's going up. And the way Social Security is laid out, when everything goes up, they factor all that in, and recipients, and we're talking close to 70 million, will get that pay raise. So we'll touch on that. We'll also touch on drug corporations that are kicking up their lobbying into high gear. Why? To stop any drug price negotiation on behalf of Medicare. Millions of dollars in advertising funded by the pharmaceuticals and business are being spent to block President Biden's Build Back Better plan and the provision allowing Medicare to negotiate lower drug prices and expand benefits. That's the focus of many of those ads. And, you know, it's working. We've got a couple of Democrats that are very, very, well, we know two for sure, that are hesitant about the Build Back Better plan, and this is part of it. These lobbyists are so successful. I mean, I think there's more lobbyists from the pharmaceutical industry than any other industry in the world, working the Hill day in and day out. And they're doing a pretty good job. We're also going to talk about voting. Senate Democrats have introduced legislation aimed at restoring voting protections that were lost in two Supreme Court decisions over the course of the last decade. And we know what's going on in various states. I think it's 18 now that have passed voter suppression laws. So Rich Fiesta, Executive Director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. And you can follow Rich on Twitter, R Fiesta, A-R-A. The Twitter handle for the organization is Active Retirees. A record 2.9%, almost 3% of U.S. workers left their jobs in August, marking the highest month-to-month quit rate in the century. Can you believe what's going on? According to a report released Tuesday by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 4.2 million workers resigned from work, including over 1.6 million in the retail and hospitality industries. While quits remain disproportionately concentrated in the service sector, other areas such as manufacturing have also seen a sharp rise in worker departures. The Washington Post offers a number of possible causes, chief among them a historically tight labor market, which has increased employee leverage and allowed workers to more securely leave their jobs and seek employment with improved terms. So bottom line is this. If you're working at a dead-end job, today's worker is not staying very long. They want better benefits. They want better wages, reduction in hours, frontline workers getting sick because of COVID. And I want to tell you, there's a lot of people walking out or getting ready to walk out. I mentioned this on the show yesterday. IATSE, that's the stage employees, they have imposed a midnight Monday strike deadline. And we're talking 60,000 union members, which, if it happens, it could be the largest such action in the private sector since 2007, when over 74,000 UAW members walked off the job at General Motors. So that's in process right now. It may not happen. We'll see what happens with the talks over the weekend. Then you've got the UAW at Deere. Yesterday, 10,000 John Deere employees walked off the job. First time in 35 years. Again, we're talking wages, pension benefits. 2,000 New York hospital workers, 700 Massachusetts nurses, 1,400 Kellogg factory employees, 300 Denver airport janitors. They're all ready to go on strike. Some are already on strike, like I mentioned, Kellogg's. Around 24,000 Kaiser Permanente employees poised to walk off the job in Oregon and California, with some 38,000 Kaiser employees now authorized to strike nationwide. When you add it up, it's well over 100,000. 100,000 unionized employees could be manning picket signs by the end of the month. And I failed to mention the strike down in Alabama, Warrior Met. That's been going on for months now. So, with all this being said, Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO, spoke before the National Press Club this week. And she talked about this so-called wave of collective action sweeping the nation. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
We're fighting for the next generation. And I heard that over and over again on the picket line. We don't sell out. And many of you, as journalists, have written about the labor market in recent months. There's a lot for assignment editors to explore. The pandemic, change in administrations, the return to office debate, the great resignation, inflation. But while these forces may present new questions and challenges, the stakes remain fundamentally the same. Justice, fairness, the right to organize, bargain, and have our voices heard. And one of the most persistent questions reporters have been asking is, are people refusing to work? An NBC headline in June put it this way, is it a sluggish labor market or workers positioning themselves for better opportunities? That was the headline. The answer to that question can be found in workplaces and communities all across America. And as we gather here today, thousands of workers are on strike for a better deal and a better life. Coal miners in Alabama, nurses in Massachusetts, steel workers and machinists in West Virginia, distillery workers in Kentucky, hospital workers in upstate New York, iron workers in Pennsylvania, and Kellogg's workers in four states, riding the momentum of their compatriots from Nabisco. And at this moment, 60,000 film and television workers of the IATSE, who make our favorite shows and movies, are bargaining at the table right now for adequate sleep, meal breaks, living wages. It's as if they're fighting for the weekend all over again. And they're ready to strike if necessary. And the same goes for 35,000 workers at Kaiser Permanente in California, as Lisa mentioned, that have made the same decision. Strike if they can't get a fair deal. Some are calling this Striketober. I call it Exhibit A for why we need to rebalance the scales and put workers back in the center of our economy. The headlines reporting a shortage of workers are missing the point. The pandemic laid bare the inequities of our system, and as we try to get beyond COVID, working people are refusing to return to crappy jobs with low pay. Essential workers are tired of being thanked one day and then treated as expendable the next day. The headline isn't that there's a shortage of people willing to return to work. Instead, it's a scarcity story. We have a shortage of safe, good-paying, sustainable jobs.
Amen to that. Liz Schuler speaking this week before the National Press Club. And if you Google Liz Schuler National Press Club, you can listen to her entire speech. She went on for, almost an hour. By the way, Schuler also talked about what happened at the Department of Homeland Security. They released a memo on Tuesday on the enforcement of immigration and labor laws, and this is what Liz said. The Department of Homeland Security has taken a very important step to ensure that immigration enforcement supports rather than interferes with the effective enforcement of the laws meant to protect all workers in this country. In order to improve wages and working conditions, we must change the current enforcement environment in which employers violate labor laws with impunity while immigrant workers live in fear. It is long past time for our country to rebalance its worksite enforcement priorities. And this directive is a much-needed step in the fight to remove the barriers to organizing and promote a just recovery for all. Liz Schuler speaking on what the Homeland Security announced this week regarding immigration, labor laws, and during the Trump administration, there were raids all over by ICE, and a lot of companies had to shut down because of what happened. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, Jeff Stoffer. On behalf of the American Legion.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. Celebrating 50 years, you could find more at ulagency.org. Before we get to Jeff Stoffer, just want to give a shout out to the organizers of the apprenticeship fair. We had Doreen Cannon on the show a couple of days ago. Doreen is president of Plumbers Local 55 in Cleveland, Ohio. And she said that they had about 230 attendees, and it was probably more because not everybody signed up when they went in. There was a bunch of people at the open, and they didn't get an opportunity to jot their name down. So at least 230 there, and she wanted to thank the various trades. That includes Local 33 sheet metal workers, Local 17 of the iron workers, where we record the show Monday through Friday, Local 44, the roofers and waterproofers and carpenters. Got the painters and allied trades. Of course, the plumbers from 55. Pipe fitters, 120. Laborers, 310. Local 38 of the IBEW. 18 of the operating engineers, along with the bricklayers and allied craft workers. ACT Ohio was there, as well as Cleveland Builds. So they haven't done this in person a long time because of the pandemic. They did it virtually, and you just can't get, I mean, virtual works in some ways good because you get a broader audience, but you want that direct contact. And apparently, a lot of trades got some good leads on future workers. So hats off to Plumbers Local 55. All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, Jeffrey Stoffer of the American Legion magazine. He handles all the media and communications. He's here to talk about the November edition. Hey, Jeff, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you again, Flash. Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, there's three stories you want to talk about, and I want to talk about this report. It was a national security report that came out in 1950, many, many moons ago, and apparently it's something that could come out today. Talk to me about this, Jeff.
It is. It's really an interesting parallel. You know, back then in the aftermath of World War II, and the Cold War was just sort of brewing, all eyes were on what is to become of this confrontation, this global confrontation between, you know, Western democracy and capitalism versus the Eastern Bloc and communism. And, you know, this report both sort of warned global leaders, or American leaders in particular, allied Western leaders, of the situation. And then it laid out kind of a roadmap about how to begin solving the problem. And I think importantly quoted in the report is by all means short of war, and how to block, you know, future expansion of Soviet power and the Kremlin's, you know, control and influence, and to sort of foster a world where, you know, American ideals or democracy and free market and open trade and that sort of thing could flourish. And it was, you know, you look at this report and they had several planks to it, and the parallels between what they were saying in that national security report over 70 years ago, it really matches up with what's going on in terms of today's China and today's Russia and even the Taliban in terms of their, you know, pretty much, you know, inviolate intolerance of, you know, Western trade and capitalism and freedom and tolerance that we, you know, try to espouse to the world. Mm-hmm. And what they do here that I think is really interesting is what Alan Dowd states, I think, so eloquently in this, is that back then the Eastern Bloc were, and the Soviet Union in particular, was literally walled off from the West with a real wall, right?
Right.
And now we are kind of intertwined with China economically. I mean, our nation is very economically intertwined with it. And people may forget that China is still and stands now as the world's top manufacturing nation in terms of product, top exporting nation, and the second largest economy in the world. And you add to that that they have, and Alan makes this point later in the article, that they've increased their defense spending by 517% since 2000. So there's this, you know, kind of theory at work that through, you know, economic, industrial, psychological, cultural means that they, and technology, that China is sort of building sort of a multi-front position to, you know, ultimately expand its influence over the world. And this is the concern that they had with the Soviet Union back in 1950.
Sure.
So the report is pretty interesting in the fact that, you know, that they lay out a several sets of values that Alan articulates and how they parallel with today, you know, and one of those lines was, we must, quote, affirm our values in the conduct of our national life. And these include freedom, tolerance, the importance of the individual, and supremacy of reason over will, which was what they were saying in 1950. And, you know, you think about those terms, freedom, tolerance, and the importance of the individual, and the supremacy of reason over will, and you kind of say, does that match up with what the Taliban is trying to accomplish? You know, would that be a reasonable defense against it, against the, you know, the intolerance and the, you know, what's going on in the Middle East? And, you know, you look at the, you know, the G7 NATO summits and the United Nations, you know, we need to, you know, remember to draw attention to the fact that there are prison camps and there are these work camps in certain countries like China and the Uyghur concentration camps and the
sure.
various problems. But so affirm our values, affirm the values of freedom and justice and tolerance in a democracy. That was one. And we can see that there are parallels to that that could be applied to today's, you know, Taliban situation and China. Then America must invest more in defense. And the report in NSC 68 said that the only way we can deter war is to be strong, is to have a strong national defense. That's proven through history that countries that don't have a strong national defense and divest in their security or their military find themselves very susceptible and to aggressor regimes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you think about that as we look at our current situation in terms of men and women who serve in the U.S. Armed Forces today. I think it's at 0.4% of our nation serves. And back then, you know, even at that time, this was right at the dawn of the Korean War was about to kick off, you know, and right after World War II. But there was a kind of a obviously, the nation divested a little bit from military strength in terms of men and women under arms, but also spending and how you build your military complex. But at the end of the day, the China knows this through history, because in times when China has had breakdowns and lost control in the empires and all of this, it was in times when they let their defense falter, and then they found themselves kind of at the mercy of the British and whatnot in the 1800s. That they have, what's interesting about China, and I always am fascinated by this, is they always play the long game. Is China has this big, you know, we're lucky if we get a 5-year strategic plan. They have like a 500-year strategic plan, and all of these little elements they're trying to build up in order to, you know, strengthen their economy, their culture, and their military toward a desire that we are certainly unsure about and somewhat, suspect about. You know, what are their ultimate intentions? And, you know, you look at some of these other countries like in Afghanistan and the Taliban Russia, and you know that Russia has been aggressor. They've aggressed into other countries around the former Soviet Union, Ukraine and Georgia and all of that. And yet you know that there is this kind of long game interest in expansion. And that's the concern, I think, that the NSC 68 was bringing up when they wrote this. This is a National Security Council report. And then another important point I think that Alan brings up in here is, in dealing with Russia and China, we must, quote, and this is a quote from the 1950 report, leave open the possibility of negotiation, end quote, and allow them to retreat, quote, with a minimum loss of face. And so the point is if we do have a stronger military, and we can, or we do have a way to, you know, kind of reverse some of the expansionist policies and approaches, we have to let, you know, Russia and China, you know, change course without losing their sense of national pride. And that's a tricky element, I think, in this whole thing.
Yeah.
And that another point that the NSC 68 made was that it argued that the Cold War would require, quote, ingenuity, sacrifice, unity, and the tenacity to persevere until our national objectives have been attained. They basically drew up a roadmap to help the United States and the West manage the first Cold War. And what Alan Dowd is saying in this article is that as we enter Cold War II, we would do well to familiarize ourselves with what the NSC 68 was saying, and that it could be a decent roadmap or a reasonable roadmap to consider in terms of security policy going forward as we enter what he describes as Cold War II. And we may be entering that.
This is a great article, Jeff. And the takeaway seems to be we have to build up our defense, our military. And this kind of reminds me of what Reagan did, which led to the breakup of the Soviet Union in the late 1980s going into the 90s, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it plays to a way of thinking that goes back many decades, and that the best way to ensure peace is to be strong. And with our nation, you know, by and large, is not expansionist. You know, our missions militarily have been to liberate others from expansionists and those who have used force to take over, you know, other countries and regimes, property, territory, land, you know, people. And this is a kind of a time-honored principle of the American Legion is peace through strength. And our organization has always been very strong on using diplomatic means and highly supportive of, you know, State Department negotiations to prevent war, because no one hates war more than those who have fought it.
Sure.
And the veterans of America have always sought to find other ways through our global differences than to prosecute war.
This is a heck of an article. NSC-68 is the title of the article. It's a paper written by the State Department in 1950, which could have been written today. Eerie stuff. Jeff Stouffer on our live line. He's with the American Legion magazine. More to come later in the show. Rich Fiesta on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we're available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Jeff Stouffer. We do this each and every month. My gosh, started this, I believe, in 2009. We always preview the upcoming issue, which is the November edition. And Jeff handles all media and communications on behalf of the American Legion. For complete updates, just go to legion.org. Unknown Soldier's Stormy Voyage Home. This goes back to 1920, right after the American Legion was founded. Jeff, talk to me about this article.
Well, this is a story that we're paying very close attention to now because it is we're coming up in November, the 100th anniversary of the dedication of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery. And the story is very closely related to the origins of the American Legion because one of the founders of the American Legion, Hamilton Fish, was the congressman who introduced the legislation that brought the unknown soldier back to the United States and installed the initial crypt in 1921, in November 11th, 1921. And it was a very American Legion-driven initiative because these World War I veterans who had come into France, and they'd been in France, they'd been in Paris, and they saw under Arc de Triomphe in Paris the tomb and the eternal flame for the unknown soldier there. And they said to themselves, we need one of these because we know we have so many who are lost, you know, who lost their lives at war, who we cannot identify. You know, that's, and I've been thinking a lot about that, you know, only in recent wars have we not really had that issue because they can pretty much identify pretty much everybody now. But back then, people would die fighting and they had no idea who they were. They didn't have the information that we do today, the data. So to remember an unknown soldier, and it's amazing when you go to Europe and you go to some of these cemeteries, there's a placard of all of the unknown soldiers, like at Normandy, I think that there's like 1,100 unknown soldiers that are recognized and honored at the Normandy American Cemetery. The bottom line is this is the story of a very important moment in history where they made the decision. The bill called for the selection of an unknown soldier in France from 3 coffins. And the Sergeant Edward Younger, who was an enlisted man by design, picked the one that would come home to the United States and be encrypted at Arlington National Cemetery so that everyone would remember the sacrifices of those who are named and not named, you know, for our war efforts. And the story is this, is that ship, the USS Olympia, which was a U.S.-Spanish-American War ship that was given the assignment to go bring the unknown soldier home, nearly capsized in a hurricane on the way home. And the story that we have here by J.R. Neubiser literally just tells the story. It's a harrowing story of how they had to, you know, secure the coffin. They couldn't put the coffin in the cargo hold because the coffin had to have a place of respect and dignity on the ship, which is all well and good until you're in a Category 3 hurricane. And this thing, the Atlantic was an absolute mess as they sailed from Le Havre, France, to the United States to bring the unknown soldier home. And I mean, we're talking Category 3, 4, and 5, and there were multiple storms that hit this ship. And I really never knew this story until I ran into it looking through some of the work that the Society of the Honor Guard of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers, that's who we're working with to help celebrate the centennial. These are former sentinels who go out and do the ceremonies. And it's important to note that more than 3 million people a year go to visit that scene, to watch them do the changing of the guard, to pay respect to the unknowns who are encrypted there. But I think one of the interesting quotes in this is came from a guy named Captain Graves B. Erskine, who was a Marine, and it was the Marines on the ship who were, you know, charged with protecting the unknown soldier as they brought him home. And he was later quoted as saying, after he surviving this terrible thing where they had to strap in the coffin, and that people were getting injured and nearly getting washed overboard in this terrible storm, he says, "The agonizing thought came to me, what if the unknown soldier, the hero America waits to honor, is washed overboard? I knew if such a thing happened, I might as well jump over with him." The guy was absolutely a very interesting guy. He went on to have a very storied military career. Graves B. Erskine did, and was a career officer, and then went on was in Nicaragua and served in jungle operations and all this, and then in World War II he was a brigadier general, and he was at Iwo Jima, and he ultimately served as the technical advisor for the Sands of Iwo Jima movie, which was a big blockbuster. And anyway, the bottom line is this tells the story of how they had to absolutely almost every nautical mile across that ocean. They were in their oilskin jackets, and they were fighting terrible rain and storms and a swollen ocean. And it was a very tumultuous trip, but lo and behold, finally toward the end, the sea calmed down and they brought that unknown soldier home, who now gets this great experience of fanfare and recognition and honor and remembrance. And like right now, and it's interesting, we are honoring the centennial of the dedication of the tomb in 1921. And the Society of the Honor Guard, Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, has events nationwide. They're from Texas to Arlington to Indianapolis, Valdosta, Georgia, Shreveport, Louisiana, East Helena, Montana, all over the country. Veterans and people who understand the meaning of why we honor an unknown soldier are gathering to have these big November centennial events. And in fact, the American Legion and the Society are in Europe in about a week to kind of reenact and trace the steps from the time that the selection was made through transportation to Le Havre to on to the USS Olympia. And then they're going to have a ceremony there. They're going to have ceremonies at the USS Olympia, which is still on the water in Philadelphia, and that's going to be an event where they remember that with, they're doing educational experience and they're doing why we play taps, what is the meaning of taps, kind of a seminar that they're doing November 8th through 10th in Arlington at Crystal Gateway Marriott. So we'll have lectures and that sort of thing, and I plan to be there to kind of take that all in and do some coverage of that. But bottom line is, it's a very unique story, and until I really got studying this as a part of the American Legion Centennial Committee, I didn't really ever understand the American Legion's connection to it. But it was the World War One veterans who brought this unknown soldier home, who made the call to do that. And that was again followed by, in the 50s, Eisenhower authorized the bringing home of a World War II and Korean War unknown soldier. And then there was a Vietnam War unknown soldier who, interestingly, there are three CREPs. There's one for the World War II Korean unknown. There's the original one. And then there's a CREP for the Vietnam War unknown soldier. But that unknown soldier was actually much later and fairly recently identified through DNA. And so he's not an unknown soldier anymore. And he was actually Air Force, and he was exhumed and repatriated. And that tomb remains empty, the Vietnam War crypt. So there's three there. And it's really kind of an interesting story, and it's interesting how, you know, we've got this 24/7 guard that protects the unknown soldier, and it's the kind of the place where we, if you've ever been there, I strongly recommend that anybody who's planning to go to the Washington area to make their way to Arlington National Cemetery to view the changing of the guard and the ceremony that goes on. They fill up this amphitheater and the stone steps with visitors all the time who solemnly watch as this goes on. And it's a very moving experience to view. And so, you know, again, I think it's important that we remember those who died fighting for our country, many of whom were never identified. And this goes on, you know, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier actually goes on to honor all who have died and sacrificed for our nation. So it's a meaningful moment for the American Legion. It's a meaningful moment for our nation to take a moment and pause. But there's going to be a nationwide pause on November 11th, and that's all laid out in the magazine in the November issue about a nationwide sort of a pause to say thank you and to remember those who were not identified who died fighting for our country.
Well said, my man. It's all contained in that November edition, as Jeff alluded to, the Unknown Soldier's Stormy Voyage Home. We're just about out of time. I just want to do a shout out here for a post 385 and their basketball youth league. That's contained in the November edition as well. And they're doing a great job trying to make sure that the streets are safe and keeping kids away from crime. So maybe we'll do that in a future edition of the show. Jeff, you take care. Great job. Great stories today. We'll talk to you next month. All right.
Thanks a lot, Flash. Pleasure to be with you.
Okay, quick break. Rich Fiesta is with the Alliance for Retired Americans, and he is coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars. That would be Mr. Richard Fiesta. Rich heads the Alliance for Retired Americans. Website is retiredamericans.org. You can follow them on Twitter at Active Retirees. Active Retirees. Hey, Rich, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Doing fine, Flash, and as always, great being back with you.
Big story this week, Social Security recipients, and there's plenty of them, close to, I believe, 70 million, getting a pay raise starting January 1. Now, over the last, couple of decades, the pay raises have not been very generous. This one's a little bit different, though, right, Rich?
That's right. The formula that the Bureau of Labor Statistics uses came out this week with a 5.9% pay raise, the highest in decades for the COLA, for the cost of living adjustment. We have seen some increased costs in the market basket that's used to determine what the COLA is. And starting January 1st, 5.9% for Social Security, people getting disability benefits, for example, at the VA, and other programs are normally 4.9%, 1% less, like federal pensions, for example. So it's welcome news. We at the Alliance have always thought that the COLA was inadequate to address what seniors actually spend their money on, like health care, rent, food, for example. So this will help. But we, as you know, think that Social Security needs to be expanded in other areas, and this is a good way to point that out.
Yeah, I'm reading the COLA, cost of living allowance, has averaged about 1.4% over the past 10 years. So though this is quite significant, and it amounts to an additional $92 a month for the average retired worker, $92 more a month. Now, I have to ask you, Rich, how does this affect the trust fund since more money will be coming out? Do we have any answers to that?
Well, it's preliminary. It shouldn't really affect the trust fund that much because the trust fund, you know, is based on how many people are working, how many people are paying into the Social Security trust fund. I mean, if you want to help the trust fund, let's raise wages because then more money will be going into it and people will have better and higher benefits when they retire. So let's raise the minimum wage, for example, easy place to start. Yeah. And let's have, as we can see it throughout the economy, workers right now are demanding higher wages. So that's the best way to help the Social Security Trust Fund. And we at the Alliance for Retired Americans have been saying, let's just raise the artificial cap on wages because the top earners don't pay anything into Social Security after a certain amount.
Yeah, what is that? What is that that cap right now? Like 140 some thousand or something like that?
That's right. It's 142,000 and change. And as part of the COLA, they'll say what next year's cap is, and that will move to $147,000 in 2022.
Yeah, workers are a little upset right now, don't you think? Have you noticed what's going on in America? They're quitting their jobs in record numbers, especially in low-wage industries. Some in manufacturing. It depends on what they're being paid, if they're not getting decent benefits for pensions and health care and things like that. But there's a record amount of strikes going on right now. So we are at very, very interesting times. That being said, let's talk about Medicare drug prices. And for so many years, since they had Part D, Medicare was not allowed to negotiate drug prices like they do in the VA. Where are we with this? Because this isn't this contained in the Build Back Better Act that Biden's trying to push through?
Yeah, that's right, Flash. Allowing Medicare to negotiate for drug prices, which was banned in the 2003 Medicare law passed by a Republican Congress and signed by President George W. Bush, has allowed Medicare beneficiaries and, frankly, people throughout the economy, whether or not you're on Medicare, to pay the highest prescription drug prices in the world. So right now, we're knocking at the door to fix that. It's in the Build Back Better. We at the Alliance for Retired Americans commissioned a poll this year. 90% of retirees want this, and in fact, nearly that number of people of any age want this common sense provision that will bring down prices that people pay at the pharmacy counter. It will save the government, depending how they implement it, anywhere from $500 billion to $750 trillion, and we could use that savings to bring better benefits to Medicare, like hearing, dental, vision, for example. Sure. It's a win-win-win for consumers and taxpayers.
Obviously, Rich, sounds like a good idea, but there's a lot of lobbyists on Capitol Hill that do not want this to happen. Talk to me about that, because I'm reading there's a lot of lawmakers taking a whole lot of dough from Big Pharma not to do what we're talking about, right?
Oh, that's right. I mean, the most profitable industry in the United States, the big pharma industry, of course, is spending literally millions on lobbying and lobbyists on television, in print ads, on social media, to stop a common sense solution like allowing Medicare to raise prescription drugs. I just saw a report the other day that there are about 1,500 pharma lobbyists in one form or another. That's almost 3-1 for every member of Congress, for example. So they will not stop because they haven't stopped since they got this provision put into law in 2003. So we at the Alliance for Retired Americans have been fighting this for 18 years. We're at the door now. We're mobilizing our members, and hopefully in the coming weeks we can get this done.
I see one of the reps is Scott Peters. He's one of three House Democrats blocking the negotiations. This was in the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Turns out that Mr. Peters accepted over $88,000 in donations from drug corporations this year alone. So when that's happening, you're not going to see progressive legislation happening in Washington, no doubt. Rich, we got a couple of minutes left here. What's the latest regarding voting? I know the Democrats are trying their best to restore voting protections. Many of them lost because of recent Supreme Court decisions. What's the latest on that?
Well, Senate has introduced the House passed John Lewis Voting Rights Act, a major act that would restore things that the Supreme Court of the United States has taken away from voting. We would get early voting, for example. We would have more security and transparency in our voting as well. So now it's, as you know, trying to get around or overcome the Senate filibuster rule. That's a very important thing. All 50 Democrats in the Senate, they're actually unified on this issue. And in the old days, extending the Voting Rights Act was a very bipartisan thing. It had 60, 70 votes for it. Unfortunately, now we're stuck at 50. So Congress has to make some decisions, the Senate in particular, about getting the most fundamental thing in our democracy, voting rights, restored and stopping any barriers like we've been seeing in all these states over the last 2 years. So we've got to go to work soon on that, too.
18 states have passed laws suppressing the vote. Yeah, you would think that we would encourage voting, but here in America, we're doing just the opposite. It's very sad. All right, Rich, we'll button it up there. Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. They're on Facebook, Retired Americans, on Twitter, Active Retirees, and you could follow Rich on Twitter, R Fiesta, A-R-A. You take care, stay safe. We'll talk to you in a month, okay?
Great. Always great being with you, Flash. Take care, too.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the latest from the stagehands. They may be walking out. That and more. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.